Welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm Sean Delaney and I'm glad that you can join me today for our weekly mixture of chat and inspiration on the topic of teaching and learning. If you like what you hear, or if you're new to the programme and you'd like to listen back to any previous editions, you can download around 315 previous podcasts by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. Claire Caroon is an experienced primary school teacher and a teacher educator with a particular interest in the teaching of mathematics. She runs a website called Primary CPD, and on that website are several resources and ideas related to teaching mathematics. Claire also blogs on that website, and some of her recent blog posts have been critical of the new primary mathematics curriculum that has been circulated for consultative purposes by the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment. My interview with Claire takes place over two programmes beginning today and continuing next week. For the first part of our conversation, I asked Claire to tell me a little bit about her background in teaching and how in particular she became interested in mathematics education.
Well, I started working with the PCSP in the year 2001. I was on the maths team originally. They would have been employing a large number of teachers then to help with the rollout of the in-service days for the 99 curriculum. Then I moved to the science team the following year, and then the following 2 years after that I worked as a maths and science quidjahor, mainly science quidjahor, just going to schools and helping and meeting with teachers and trying to address any of the issues or questions or concerns that they had, or give them help with planning and so on.
And what kind of background had you had in teaching before joining the PCSP?
I was actually only teaching for 5 years. I taught for 4 years in the De La Salle and Ballyfermot. I moved home. I'm originally from Westmeath, so I got a position actually in St. Etchins in Kinnegad, which is the primary school I would have gone to myself. I was working in the school for a year and just had itchy feet, was wanting to try something different. Saw the advertisements for them looking for, at that time, teachers to help with the facilitation of the maths in-service days for the following school year. Always had an interest in maths, but I would never put myself out there as being somebody that is very good at maths. I didn't even do honours maths for my own Leaving Cert. I was more concerned at the time about making sure I got an honour in Honours Irish to get into the teaching college. But I would have had an interest, and I suppose my brain would probably be more mathematical minded than maybe necessarily language side and language based. So when the opportunity arose, I applied, got it, and the rest kind of then just went ahead with the 4 years.
You're obviously still very interested in mathematics education because your website refers to maths a lot, not just to maths, but it is something you've developed your interest in the area of maths education.
When I was with the PCSP, it was both maths and science, and actually ended up being more science-based for me. I would have done some science summer courses, and then kind of demands, personal demands with family, young children, that took over. It kind of sidelined all of that kind of stuff for a couple of years. And it was actually in 2010 when I got a request from one of the education centres that they had been let down by a tutor for a summer course, and would I be at all available or interested in tutoring it? And I kind of hesitantly said yes, but basically by getting back into that then, it kind of, the bug had bitten me again. I found, I was always interested in computers, and I would have found that it was way easier to store my links, the information I wanted to dissipate to teachers online, rather than trying to be always, you know, photocopying and having enough copies and so on. I would always find myself it's way easier as well to access information when it's stored electronically or digitally. So the whole purpose of the website initially was actually just to kind of curate in one place the stuff that I had come across that I thought was useful and was worth passing on to teachers. I wasn't really majorly involved in social media at all myself. I didn't even have my own Facebook page actually only up until about 6 months ago. But at the time that I was still moving ahead with the site, that I found it was easier to keep teachers up to date with what was going on, or if I came across something new or something interesting, that social media was what a lot of teachers were using, and that was an easy way then to kind of keep a line of communication opened with particularly those who may have come to courses in the past or even attended a summer course and had quite a good basis, but might not actually then come across something new or different if it hadn't been communicated to them via a particular source.
And do you still offer courses for teachers?
Yes. So nearly every year for the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years, maybe even 6 years, I would always do 2 summer courses. These would always be in conjunction, though, with an education centre. So it's usually the education centre would contact me. They would look for the application for the via the internet or via the department, or usually Drumcondra give the approval for summer courses, the Drumcondra Education Centre. So it would always be that I'm working in conjunction with an education centre, and they would effectively be hosting it, and it would be in a venue that they would pick, and then I just basically go on and go to the venue and present. I also do quite a lot of evening courses, again, usually with the same education centres. They would often contact me in advance of their autumn or their spring programmes to see if I'm available. Coming up actually next week and the following week, I'm doing a brand new session that I haven't done before on number talks, which again is something that I've recently got involved in and interested in myself. And then depending as well on demand, sometimes schools contact me again or to do Croke Park hours and do sessions, facilitate those.
And you've mentioned number talks there, and you actually have a review of a book about number talks on your website at the moment. Can you say a little bit more about number talks?
I had come across it, mainly Sherry Parrish. I'd come across a couple of videos of hers. I just think the number talks, it's a fantastic way to present material to the children and to allow them to verbalise and voice their own approaches. I find that often initially when the children are new to it, I suppose their approaches are very closed and narrow. Often when you'd ask a child, how did you calculate the answer? And you're asking them to do it mentally without being allowed to write it down. They will often tell you that they visualised the column method, their units and their tens, which effectively is a written algorithm and not really what we're hoping children are using from a mental computation point of view. But even I would have to say that when I was a child, I thought when you were asked to compute mentally, it meant to do the written thing, but in your head. Whereas now, obviously, with lots of what we have from the information from the internet, we start to see that there are mental strategies that don't necessarily have any, they're related to, but they're very different from the traditional written algorithms for written computation. And I just find that as children start to be exposed to them, they actually can take them on and even develop to the point where they've actually shown me sometimes approaches that I hadn't thought of, because I was looking at it and thinking of a way I would do it, but the children are going to come across it and come towards it their own direction. And once they realise that what I'm looking for is variety, it's amazing the variety of approaches they can come up with to just solve the one calculation.
And could you give an idea, say, of what a number talk might be like in an infant class, in a junior or middle class, and then in a senior class?
In infant classes, it's largely about them being exposed to visual images that are representing numbers. And the children are being asked to say what they see and how they see it. Now, I got caught the first time when I showed a group of children a number of dots, and I was revealing it to them on the interactive board. I was hiding it and I was asking them, what did they see? How many did they see? And I think I was showing maybe, for example, it might have been 8 dots. I think it might have even been arranged as almost a 4 and 4 grouping. And the children were, some the children be suggesting 8, some were suggesting 7, some were suggesting 9. And you tend to record all of the answers irrespective, so that when you are given the answer initially, you don't give any weight to the one that you may recognize as being the correct answer. And then you ask the children to prove themselves why they think their answer is the correct answer. So it basically builds up from there. One of the things that I got caught on the first time was, in the book it would often say, how do you see them? And the first time I asked that, the children said, well, I saw them with my eyes. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to phrase this differently. So it was like, in what way did you count? So this child was saying, I saw the 8. And I was saying, well, did you count the 8 straight away? Because I only showed it to you for a limited amount of time. And then they started to say, no, well, I saw a 1, 2, 3, 4. And I saw 1, 2, 3, 4. And I know 4 and 4 is 8. And so on. And then some children might say, well, I saw a 2 and a 2 and a 2 and a 2. And I know a 2 and a 2 is 4. And that 2 and 2 is 4. So the 4 and 4 is 8. And it really just depends then on what they start to see. Some some children, even though it was arranged as a 4 and 4 of the dots together, they saw that across the top there was a 4 and then across the bottom there was a 4, and they were starting to put them together like that. So it's really starting to get the children to appreciate that it doesn't matter what way you see them, your way is valid, but we would like you to verbalize it because other children might have seen it a different way. And by one child hearing the way the other child has seen it or perceived the dot arrangement, it starts to make them be more open as well, that there is more than one way to see this. First and second class, they might look at also, in Cherry Parish's book, she recommends for grade 1, which would be similar to our first class, she would recommend that they also would look at the dot images, but then they might have maybe multiple rows of them. It's not just limited to below 10, it might go up to 20, and then also start to progress on to actual, what we would call more abstract representations, where it's just digits and the symbols. So it might be 7 plus 9, 10 plus 8, and again asking them how they know the answer and why, what are they thinking of, or what are they picturing to get the answer. And then as it goes up through the classes, then it starts to develop where the numbers get bigger. What I like about it is it always tends to focus on a group of calculations that suit a certain strategy or approach. But while it's not mustn't be limited to that approach, that they often have a trend. So she'll focus on doubles and near doubles. She'll focus on ones maybe where you're adding on groups of tens or groups of amounts you're adding on in stages. She would focus in subtraction as removal, where you're thinking of subtraction as taking an amount away from the biggest number, but also subtraction as being the difference, or adding on to subtract, like complementary addition, where instead of you maybe saying if it was 17 subtract 14, it's more efficient to think of, well, how many from 14 up to 17 than it is to think of removing 14 from the 17.
And are the number talks typically seen as something that might be done as a warm-up in a lesson or as revision? Or how does someone like Sherry or other people who've used them, how do they envisage them being used by a teacher?
Sherry very much envisages that they would be used as a 5 to 15 minute warm-up, and that it's a daily part of the maths routine. So it's something that's done at the beginning of every class, effectively as an oral warm-up. Personally, I would say, I think, yes, their frequent use is very valuable. I wouldn't insist daily. I think that when a teacher is teaching something in shape and space, there's other oral and mental starters that they could use that would be more appropriate to that, and that number talks don't lend themselves to. So I think it is about the teacher picking what's most useful at certain stages.
How would you describe your overall approach to the teaching of maths?
Concrete, pictorial, abstract is the very first thing I would say. And then the other one is that I believe maths should be taught for understanding. I am very much not necessarily an advocate on teaching procedures for the sake of procedures. So if I take the two of those and separate them, the concrete pictorial abstract would come from Jerome Bruner. His teachings, ideology, his educational approach very much would underpin Singapore maths. And I'm very interested in the way they teach maths in Singapore. Singapore is one of the highest attaining countries in maths consistently since the early 90s. It's always been in the top three in the TIMSS and the PISA results. Interestingly, prior to the 1990s, it actually had only an average attainment in maths. It was only just kind of keeping up with some of the other countries. And it was around that time that the Ministry of Education in Singapore felt that they needed to overhaul the curriculum. They needed to really examine what was best practice around the world. So as people would say, we call this maths that they teach in Singapore, Singapore maths, but there's really nothing in it that originated in Singapore. They pulled it from all different places. And one of it was Jerome Bruner's teaching ideology, theory about a concrete pictorial abstract approach, that before you touch the abstract element of maths, where you're talking about digits, symbols, your operation signs, you need to start at a concrete situation where the children are exploring things concretely, and then to move to a pictorial. And I often say to teachers when I'm working with them in courses in our circumstances, in our situation, I do think Irish teachers are very good now at appreciating the need for concrete materials in maths. But I also feel that what often happens is, and I say to them, think of them as stepping stones. So you have a concrete stepping stone, you have a pictorial stepping stone, and you have an abstract stepping stone, and there's a river the child has to get across. if you have a strong child, they can probably take that jump from the concrete to the abstract and manage the jump. But if you have a less able, less stronger child, they can't take that jump from concrete to abstract. They need to go into the pictorial stage first. And I think that is the one that we probably have not emphasized enough in Ireland. That once you have been engaged with the concrete materials, you need to move to a stage where there's pictorial representations of the same. So the children appreciate how they're now moving away from these materials, but they can visualize and picture the materials themselves or draw images of it, and then move to the abstract where there's no visual support. So that would be one of the main things that I'd be very much interested in. With the Singapore Mats, actually, one of the things that I found very interesting was that the Ministry for Education in Singapore around that time totally overhauled the curriculum. They also took control of the publication of the main books that were being used. So the textbooks, the workbooks that the children were using in the Singapore schools was also basically coming from the Ministry for Education, not just the curriculum. So it had to be based on the curriculum that they had basically prescribed. The other thing that I was saying to you about is the understanding. We need to teach the children to understand maths, not just do maths. I would definitely feel that when I was taught maths in school, it was about doing it. When I think back to textbooks that I would have been exposed to, you opened up a chapter of a book. It could be on multiplication. And the first thing that was on the top of the page was, here's how you do the multiplication. If it's long multiplication, short multiplication, here's how you do it. You do this step, you do that step, you do the other step, and if you do all of these in the right order, you will get it right. And if you don't do them in the right order, you're going to get it wrong. And that was very much the approach that I would have learnt myself when I was in primary school. I would even say there's still a lot of textbooks out there that when you open up the page on the chapter, the first thing is, here's how you do it. And the rest of the chapter is spent practicing the doing of that. Where I would have taken it is that no, you need to first of all understand and engage with the concept. So back then to your concrete exploration, and again thinking of the example of the long multiplication, that maybe they're using their base 10 blocks, they're laying it out in arrays and so on, then they're moving to pictorial structures where they're drawing representations of this, that same thing, moving maybe onto the area model where they're drawing out their squares and using that to maybe a grid where they're multiplying out the different factors and then combining them, and finally when they're ready, expose them to the actual traditional long multiplication algorithm, but that then they can see where it's coming from and why it has evolved, where it has evolved from. I used to teach fifth class for a good few years, and at the beginning of every year you'd get a new class in, and the first thing that you'd do would be usually a chapter on revision, which was revising fourth class work, and long multiplication was one of the things that they got in fourth class. And one of the first things that I would usually do is I would let them do a long multiplication calculation with no support. I wouldn't revise, I wouldn't go through it, I wanted to see how they would do it. And nearly every year, half of the class would get it wrong, and half of the class would get it right. And when we would start to look at why, what had happened, the half of the class that would got it right would very smugly tell the other half of the class that, look why you got it wrong, you didn't put the zero in on the second line. And I would then ask and say, well, why is it that they have to put in the zero on the second line? Well, if you don't put in the zero on the second line, you will get it wrong. But why? Why is the zero there? And nearly all of even the half that would get it right wouldn't be able to explain to me that you're now multiplying by a multiple of 10. And you've basically moved up all the digits one place and you have to put in a necessary zero as a result. And that's where I would be questioning, what's the point of them doing long multiplication and being able to do it if they don't actually understand where the structure is coming from?
So how would you describe then a typical or an ideal maths lesson from your point of view? You can go for a fifth class or go for another class if you prefer.
Oh, I often think it really just depends on what is the purpose. I suppose I would always say to people when they're planning to think of a concrete pictorial abstract approach. But I would also say to them to not necessarily think that that must happen every day. It might be that if there's something like that they were working towards, say, a unit of work. If it was, for example, second class, they were being introduced to subtraction, but with regrouping and renaming. That might be happening over the course of a week or 2 weeks. Now, one of the things that I started to do last year, actually, and again, it was because of my more recent involvement with number talks, before we even went into the actual, again, algorithm for the traditional way of subtracting and regrouping. I actually gave the children some calculations that would require regrouping, but we presented them horizontally. And again, we did it as a number talk. So we tried to see what could we work out would be the answer for this without actually writing it down. And some of the children were quite good. Now, they had already been doing a little bit of it with me, but we started modelling it on open empty number lines. We started modelling it using different visuals that we had. Sometimes we even went back to just something like the 100 square. But the children started to get an idea of where the numbers, developed their number sense. Where should the answer be in relation to these numbers that I'm working with?
Another question a lot of teachers have when they hear about somebody who has interest in or expertise in maths education is, how do you teach tables?
Now, tables is actually one of the things that I am quite big into at the moment. I don't tend to use the language of tables. I prefer to use number facts. And I like to see that the idea that there's number facts that the children need to know to help them in their basic computation. Tables, interestingly, got their name because they were written out in tables and in tabular form and were basically presented to people and were told to learn them off by rote. And even when I was in school, you went through them from the start of the list to the bottom of the list. Whereas the approach I would take now at number facts is I would say to the teachers, well, we have a group of number facts that we want to look at. What's our focus? What's our concern with these? I actually, in conjunction with EDCO, I've actually written more recently a set of books specifically aimed at number facts 1 to 4. And in those, just to give an example, in the third class, when we're looking at multiplying by 5, what we try to get the children to see is that we start with some basic activities where they're just doing concrete activities. They're using maybe a 100 dots grid to model their arrays or rows of 5. They're doing a bit of skip counting. But then what I want them to see is that if we model 10 rows of, for example, 8, and then if we split that in the middle, and I usually use a pen or a marker to go across the arrays, that if we also look then, we now have 5 rows of 8. And if the children already know that 10 rows of 8 is 80, well then they should start to appreciate that 5 rows of 8 then is actually half of that amount. So then if I know what 10 times the number is, well then I can work out what 5 times the number is because it's always half of whatever the 10 times is. And that's the specific strategy that we teach them. And why I much prefer a strategy-based approach is that instead then we're not putting a ceiling on the children. So in the current situation, if you were teaching children tables and you were using songs and rhymes and memorization tricks and so on, if you went into a class and you said to them, what's 5/8? You'd hope they would say 40. But if you went into the same class and said, what's 5/18? The typical response would be, I don't know. We didn't learn that. We haven't been asked to learn that off. Whereas I would argue if the child is taught it in a strategy-based way, then you're saying, well, do you know what 5/8 is? Well, yes, it's half the 10 times. So then do you know what 5/18 is? Oh, yeah, well, that would be half 10 times 18. So that's half of 180. And I'm hoping the child can work out that it's 90. So I would feel that if we teach the children these basic number facts that they're required, but using a strategy-based approach, instead then of us capping and putting a ceiling on them where we would traditionally have a limit to the tables at 10 multiplied by 10 or 10 plus 10 for first and second doing addition and subtraction, that now what we're actually doing is we're emphasizing the importance of these basic ones, but we're now not putting a ceiling on it and saying, well, now if you have the strategy, you can apply that to much bigger numbers. Even if we start to, if you link it into division, once you start, the child starts to appreciate how they can divide by 5 and how they see the connection as well with even dividing by 10. In the number facts 4, I've actually got it designed where I ask the children, I show them a diagram of a pie, the pie, typical fraction pie charts, and in it shows tenths and fifths. Because I think it's really important that we link our basic facts back to other areas of the curriculum as well. So in other words, a tenth of a number, well, I divide by 10. And on the little drawing, they can see that a tenth is also a half of a fifth. So if then they're asked to work out what a fifth of a number is, then we can say, well, if you work out the tenth of the number and then you double that, well, now you've worked out what a fifth is. Now, I would have always, as an adult, worked out a fifth of something by dividing by 5. But often that's not the easiest thing. And even mentally, if you were asked to get, for example, take 20% off a particular number, like, I don't know, 34, it's not that easy. You're going into smaller numbers. Whereas if you go, well, what's 10 of it? You know, that's going to be €3.40. And then I double that, then I can see that's my fifth, that's my 20%. And I think that the strategy-based approach is far better. Now, I know there'll be people who would still argue and say, but they still need to know these basic facts and they still need to learn them off. And I would usually say to people, but what do they actually need them for? And the main reason why we got children to learn off their tables was, and again, to the 10 multiplied by 10 and the 10 plus 10, was so that they would be better equipped to do the written algorithms, their addition, their subtraction, their multiplication, long multiplication, long division, short division, because they need these basic facts for those. But then again, when you move forward and you say, well, you know, when they go to secondary school, they have a calculator to do all those calculations. And I often think that in primary school, we devote so much time and attention to teaching, in particular, for example, long division. Fifth class teachers can often devote a month to teaching long division. Sixth class teachers can often devote a month to going back over it and revising it because it's such a difficult concept. And yet, ironically, those children are going to go into first year in secondary and have the calculator to do it if they require. And I often turn to adults, teachers at courses and say to them, can you try and remember when was the last time outside of school that you did long division? Because there's very few adults that will do long division. And yet if we have to, if we're talking about the maths that we use on a day-by-day basis, it's what we do when we go down to the shops and we're working out what's the best bargain and what to buy and do I have enough? And that is all mental. And I just think mental maths and strategies for mental maths and ways to calculate mental maths has to be emphasised. I would even say more than written strategies and written structures.
You're currently learning support and resource teacher in your school. Does that only involve maths or do you have responsibility in other curriculum areas?
In our school, the teachers who have, when you're in a learning support resource teacher capacity or special ed teachers, as we're now called, we divide it up so that you've got usually a certain class level that you're working at. It helps because it means you get to know the children in that class level. So in Kinnegad, we're a very big school. We're actually the biggest primary school in Westmeath currently. There's seven teachers on the special ed team. So my responsibility for this current school year is with first class for both maths and literacy, and for second class with maths numeracy. And then I would also have some children who would come out to me on an individual or a very small group basis who maybe have, say, low incidence needs as well, which we would have previously referred to as resource teaching allocation.
And that concludes the first part of my conversation with Claire Caroon, who teaches in County Westmeath. Next week, I'll bring you more from Claire, including her concerns about the draft revised primary mathematics curriculum for junior classes. If you'd like to listen back to this programme or to any of over 300 previous Inside Education podcasts, please go to seandelaney.com and click on the podcasts tab. My own book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from good bookshops and online bookstores. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.